Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Imbibe from Imbibe Magazine. I'm Paul Clark, the executive editor of Imbibe. It is late November, and this week we're plunging straight into the holiday season. Maybe you're getting back together with friends and family after a long time away, or maybe you're aiming for something a bit more quiet and chill. However you're celebrating this year, we hope you do so safely and with great happiness. One of the things we've been getting back into recently is gathering together not just with friends and family at the holidays, but at some of our favorite events after the long break of 2020. One of the events that's always on our calendar is the Charleston Wine and Food Festival, which is coming up in early March of next year. The 2022 festival is welcoming some of its own changes. In particular, they've got a new beverage director on board, sommelier and wine educator Cha McCoy. She's also the founder of Cha Squared Hospitality, a beverage experience company focused on tourism, events, and education. And for this episode, we're chatting with Cha about how she got into wine and made a career shift into hospitality, her wine dinner series, The Communion, and what's in store for next year's Charleston Wine and Food Festival. Wanted to reach out to you for a couple of reasons, and you know, one of which is, you know, people come into the wine profession for all different kinds of reasons and with all different kinds of backgrounds. What was it that first appealed to you about wine and made it seem like a direction you wanted to go with your career? And how did you first get started in wine?
I'm gonna give you the short version. How about okay. that? So I actually got into wine after relocating to Rome, Italy. I was there doing my MBA, actually.
That's a good place to get into wine.
Yeah. Not related to wine at all. I think sometimes I say the story so fast that some people think I moved to do my MBA in wine. And I'm like, oh, no. I wasn't in one of those fancy programs. I was doing nice, good old finance. And from there, as you can imagine, living in Rome, it just became a part of my lifestyle. I like saying there's always cheese, there's always bread, and there's always wine. That's the Holy Trinity as it relates to Italy. So living there for 2 years for my MBA, you become immersed in these, I guess, just the food groups of Italy. And wine just became a second language and a souvenir for me during my time living there. So that's what, that got me originally. And it was more as I want to be more informed as a consumer. It was not really because I said, oh, I love wine so much, I'm going to go be a sommelier. I actually was just I started asking questions and visiting vineyards because I had it right in my backyard. And so just doing the easy trips to Tuscany, et cetera, you know, just to have fun on a weekend. So that's how it all started.
Right. But eventually you did make that step. I mean, you were there working on your MBA, and eventually you did take that step towards becoming a sommelier, towards a career in wine. What was it that said, okay, now's the moment, or here's the direction I need to go?
Yeah, so that was, I relocated to Rome 10 years ago. And so when I returned back to the States, my first job was actually at a wine shop in Harlem. So I worked as a cavist. And I think that it was in the time of the full gentrification. I'm from Harlem originally. So, you know, seeing how my neighborhood was changing. And then I got my first mentor. So Eric White, he's still there. He's the buyer for the winery on 116th and 8th. And he was the one who even informed me what a sommelier was, about the role and about the various degrees of certification that was out there. So I would say he was the one who planted the seed for sure about taking it professionally. I just realized I understood more Italian than the average, let's say, New Yorker. And I just came back. So I wanted to kind of continue my practicing my language and also continue learning about wine. So I came still with as a hobby. And then he's the one who actually started like, hey, you seem to have taken a liking to this. And if you're enjoying it so much, maybe you consider this as your career. And even to go a few steps back for your audience that don't know, I'm an engineer by trade. So that's actually what I was doing prior to even relocating to Italy. So that's when I started getting into the books hard, learning other things beyond Italy, because that's where I had my focus, or I should say what I call my specialty in wine. So that's where it all started. Started doing more tours, visiting more. That's why I call myself the traveling sommelier, because I just, wherever I was excited to drink, I started booking trips to visit and started learning and doing harvests in these different countries. And thank God I did have the career as an engineer still, so I was able to fully fund myself and not actually wait for the gatekeepers to include me in that. And so I was able to be more exposed to a lot more of to South Africa. I did harvest in Chile, in a lot of places where other people are waiting to be selected. I was able to go out there and get it myself. So I came back with that hands-on knowledge from the vineyard, and then I started applying for the exams. So it's a gap in between there, but it was like continuously just being on the road and learning out in the vineyards and then returning back to the States and feeling confident enough that I'm ready to take the exams. So, and that was I take my first test with the WSET program about 2017. So that's still some ways from me returning back from Italy in 2012, that I was just doing my own kind of like reading books and drinking and tasting wines and attending any seminars that my mentor sent me to, et cetera, and traveling. So that's how I officially got started. And then it was off to the races from there.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned that you kind of developed your own way to approach coming into the industry. You had a different kind of background going on. And it used to be a very traditional way that people would get their start in the wine industry and like move to becoming a sommelier. But the wine industry has changed over the years. And as a result, there are many different avenues that wine professionals can explore once you get established. How has your career trajectory evolved over the years, especially just in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think that with the pandemic, I actually end up becoming a somm in Portugal. So I relocated to Portugal in 2018 and get in a position while working as a wine consultant for a few wineries out there. And so to hold me over between consulting gigs, I actually worked at a Michelin star restaurant. And so I did not expect to actually be in a restaurant, but because I was there, it allowed me to, if you want to say, get some stripes with my somm family and peers. But at the same time, I realized, I think as many somms realized, that this is not going to be sustainable in a pandemic lifestyle. So it was almost new for me to be full time at a restaurant, but also everyone else who's been in this traditional route, they also realize like, oh yeah, this is not, you know, at this age, or I want to do something else, why don't I move up? And with the glass ceiling that we may have, whether it's because of sex, race, etc., or lack of connections, we had to start thinking a little bit differently. And so with this whole industry being on, frozen in this way over, since 2020, I think it allowed everybody to start think a little bit differently. I already came into this industry with this, okay, like rogue kind of idea of how to somm. So the definition of somm means a lot of things to different people. But as someone who understands what it means to be a wine steward, and I do that a lot through events, I continuously, you know, recognize myself as such. And I believe the community does as well. So I'm somming whether I'm in a retail store, I'm somming whether I'm hosting a private event, and I'm somming whether I'm at the restaurant. But I think that's the way I came into the industry. So I think I have also this this early version of kind of thinking that way, of being more flexible to how somms think about themselves. And I guess, like I said, I'm also the one with the MBA who thinks business. How do I, you know, as a Black woman, being able to have more equity and being able to be in a position like a Fawn Weaver, you know, I want to be able to help the generation after me who wants to be in wine. So I also have to make sure I take bigger and bolder risk and put myself and elevate myself. And maybe not too many people are just going to open that door for me. I have to go knock or, curl up the ladder and kick down some doors, shake a few tables as well, in order to make space for people to dream differently who's going to come after me.
Right. Well, I want to talk about that a little bit, because you mentioned the glass ceiling earlier, and you mentioned, you know, taking on this challenge. And the wine world has long been kind of an exclusive place with a relatively narrow audience and a small range of perspectives being shared. How do you see that changing in the time that you've been within the industry? And how do you channel your own work into expanding wine's audience and the types of voices and perspectives that are featured in that space?
You know what? I think that experiences has always been my outlet to, like, not asking people for permission. So I continue to use experiences to give back. In this case, if I'm representing wine regions, you know, I have a sweet spot in my heart for underrepresented wine regions. So in that case, it's like, okay, making sure those wines have center focus, relocating to Portugal, speaking about places like Algarve and indigenous grapes that don't even make it to the U.S. unless someone feels like, okay, we have an issue right now. There's a lot of indigenous grapes in small regions that if no one knows how to say it correctly, they say, let's replant it with Pinot Noir because that's more palatable to the mass market. But how do we keep the storytelling of a culture that's connected to these indigenous grapes, you know, to force people to like learn more about Portugal or the indigenous cultures of other regions, right? So in this case, there is a lot of storytelling that goes, you know, hand in hand with that, and events allow me to be able to be in that space. And I've also worked in media as well with my time as the editor at Cherry Bomb. So as long as people are willing to open doors for me to give me the space to bring others in, that's when we were like creating a better ecosystem on how to keep the conversation going. So I'm thinking about wine regions. I'm thinking about servants of wine, which is us, the Kavis of the world, the Psalms of the world, who are the farmers of the world, right? Who are really rooted in the idea of not only telling the stories, but also making sure that it's represented correctly. And I think that opportunities for them and myself, it only becomes clear when we have good allies that's here in the industry. And so I'm trying my best, Paul, but but I think that, you know, at the end of the day, I always go back to what you know, events and experiences. So me being collaborative with people who have tourism companies and coming up with really good vetted, oh, child, we're going to Portugal. Can you help us build the itinerary for our company? Because we want them to have a cha experience there. Are you willing to come with us? Or you at least consult for us? Or can you help with my brand? We want our small region to get more recognition. Can you put together a media? So I've worked in a way where how do I be the middleman, the connector, AKA, as they say on the streets, the plug, you know, when it comes to making sure that everyone is experiencing wine the way that I would say it was intended, which is with no filters between you and what's in the bottle, and you also understanding the story and the sense of place. And for me, that's beyond, there's one word that's always missing in Terroir, which I always keep bringing up, is culture. And so we can talk about the soil, we can talk about the water, the climate and weather, but you got to talk about the people, you got to talk about the music, you got to understand the food. And I feel like that's what brings it all together. Like, now I see why this red wine is so bold. You know, they need it for the type of food that they're eating there. Oh yeah, now I understand why there's such a culture of, you know, cocktails here, because, you know, the music is real upbeat during that time, and that's when it had its glory days, you know. So I feel like once you understand the culture, it a lot of the beverages starts to plug in and make sense. So I'm really about making sure that experiential portion, whether it's on the brand side, me working as a consultant for brands, me working for festivals and fairs, or consumer driven initiatives that I get brought in a part of, or corporate, if you want to say, so people, I can bring that message home through that too.
And that's absolutely totally true. The experience side of the equation is something that really needs to be taken into consideration when we're understanding any kind of wine, any kind of spirit, any kind of cultural experience like that. You have your own wine dinner series, The Communion, which you've hosted in several different countries over the years. What's the general approach and philosophy behind the series, and how are these wine dinners somehow more than just a wine dinner?
And it's interesting because I think when I was calling it a wine dinner, people usually ask me, what is a wine dinner? So it's good that if people at least know what that is, that we were already like somewhere there. But I try to make sure that people understand this is more wine is the focus, like the chef follow the lead of the wine with the chameleon. So that's just to like make clear of what a wine dinner is. It's more than just a tasting experience. But really, it's when I thought of the concept, it was the idea of like, how do I check all the boxes? Give people the culture, the food, through food. How do I take them on a journey to places that I've traveled to? to and that are near and dear to my heart. Like I mentioned about my time doing harvest in Chile and being able to pick, like, I don't know how many people are going to pick Chile as like their first place to go harvest. They got a lot more other countries to go to. But that's after I've experienced a few countries and lived in Italy, et cetera. So I was okay with start exploring other cultures. So how do I bring a Chilean wine dinner experience, you know, to New York City, right? And so that's why I'm able to like, okay, let's talk more about Casablanca through me also talking about Valpolicella by me living through my in Valparaiso, excuse me, which is in Chile where they do the big New Year's extravaganza on the beach. But I need some people to have like context on what's going on in these regions or subregions of Chile to understand why the wines would make sense or why there's a lot of sparkling in this region where they have the big festivals versus at the bottom where there's more like maybe a beach life, maybe there'll see some seals and some other new wildlife as we're getting closer to like Antarctica, you know? So I say all that to say that the communion has been a way for me to express almost my, I get to be like the wine griot. I get to go take a collection of stories from my travels, bring them back, and then allow people in my community to connect with now Chile or Italy or South Africa from my storytelling and making it feel real in some place that they feel welcomed, no matter how they look, no matter what they eat, you know, and so they get to have a real connection with the wine and food. But it's also been a way for me to shake up what that idea of what grows together goes together. So I've been hosting a lot of wine dinners that go with foods that people would normally not see in a traditional 6-course wine dinner meal. So I did a Senegalese tasting dinner. I had wines from Gigondas and a Barolo on a table where people were like, what? Yeah, I'm not just putting South African wine with food because it's from Africa. The idea is that what wines go well with the food that we're pairing and doing that extra work. And it's not just the thought of putting the continent together, you know, being so, I guess, narrow-minded that that's the only way to go is really being able to test your palate. And so I think I have a good palate, I would say. And I think that that's one of my joys is actually making that, doing that matchmaking and making that moment happen. Highlighting underrepresented chefs has been an honor of mine. And I think they're the ones or who continue to fuel me too. So I like being able to work with chefs that I know who get to express maybe foods from their homeland. And then I get to, they challenging me. I'm like, girl, I never did any Vietnamese food with wine, but we're going to get into that right now, you know? So when they bring me in, I feel honored actually to have the privilege to do this. Actually, my first James Beard experience is with Chef Eris. One of the previous CHOP winners, she brought me into James Beard. She's from New Orleans, and she was doing a Creole-based Thanksgiving. And I was like, okay, well, I've been to New Orleans, but I didn't realize that there's some special Thanksgiving things I need to know. And so I was like, okay, let's put together this wine list. And so, you know, I always feel honored when chefs allow me to be a part of their story. You know, I'm not here to talk. I'm just here to make the magic happen and seal the deal. So community, communion, communication, that's what I think about when I think about the communion.
And one of the reasons we wanted to get in touch with you is because you have a new role as the beverage director for Charleston Wine and Food Festival for 2022. It's an event we've always supported over the years and participated in, and this seems like a really exciting new development. That event's coming along in a few months from now. What do you have in mind for the festival, and what kinds of changes can we expect to see for those who've been to it in the past and are wondering what to see this year? And what kinds of people are going to be a part of it?
Yes, so I'm excited that you guys are back for 2022. And be able to see what magic I have planned. But yes, being the programming director for beverage and now rolling into the production and event planning side and logistics, this is a major role. And I'm very much excited to be able to take all the things that I've learned from smaller events to make sure that in such a large festival, we still have intentional and intimate moments, and especially when it comes to beverage. I think people know that I'm like the art of imbibing is like my new specialty, I should say, versus just like wine by itself too, is because I want people to feel connected with what they're drinking as much as what they're eating. Chefs normally, or has been given more recently, that platform to do the storytelling and to be able to get into more a deep dive with the foodways and the history there. But even for the communion, I'm also doing a pop-up for the communion, focused on Madeira, right? Because Charleston has such a deep relationship with that. So, and I don't think they've ever did a Madeira dinner before. So I thought that was important to have that. So that's where I'm tapping into, is the mission here of highlighting Lowcountry, making sure that we're enriching the community. So actually activating local chefs, guest chefs, doing this back together theme that we have for 2022, making sure the psalms that we're bringing in, few winemakers, and we're also bringing in some magicians, because I feel like mixologists are all magicians to me. They come up with the brilliant cocktails that they are. This the artistry that I always love too. So we got Kelly Thorne come in. She's doing a cognac and oyster pairing event. We have Shannon Mustafa coming, and she's doing rums with the view at the new Luttrell Hotel. And when I was in Charleston last, I was able to actually, I had to put the hard hat on and everything to get in there. So I think as of this month, they should be open, but they would definitely be open in time for March. So so I'm excited to have her in this brand new space, new hotel, and be able to explore rums with Shannon. And we also have Tiffany Berry, your Imbibe cover girl, I should say, for the Imbibe 75, and she's doing a journey through gin. So when the cocktail ends, we're leading there. And I already mentioned about my event, the communion with wine, and we've done a natural wine in the past, but in a seminar format. And so I decided to explore natural wine in a much larger setting. I feel like, again, the experience says it all. If someone doesn't know much of the demographics, is like, hey, I don't know, why would I sit for a natural wine, you know, seminar? They're not ready for that. Then let's have fun with it. So we're doing a natty pizza party. So we're going to have all of these. We have 10 to 12 different pizza makers coming out. So outdoors, we're going to have a bunch of importers pouring their best of the best pet nats and low intervention wines that's going to be there. And I think that that's a new way for the guests to engage with natural wine again. So tickets are still on sale for that one. So please, anyone who's listening, interested, to come out. I feel like that's going to be a heavy hitter. In Alvaro De La Vina, he's one of the importers that's going to be in town pouring for that event, De La Vina Selections. We have Habibi. She's going to be in town. She's going to be doing all of the rosé tasting that we have for one of the seminars. And Tahir has been a big supporter of the festival in the past and a good friend, so I'm excited to have her there. And lastly, I can't forget about my man Jermaine Stone. He's coming down. He's doing something really cool at Graff with Miles. And I really think that Femi and him have the similar vibe when it comes to how music plays with wine. So I'm excited for their recording and tasting that they're going to have at Graff. So there's going to be this interplay of various type of beverages. And I think that was a big push for me. I was like, we're not going to just, I know it says wine in a name, and I know everybody looks at me as the psalm, so they're going to, you know, looking for all the wine moments, which I'm excited to share. But I'm really excited to make sure that the cocktail community and also the beer community have something exciting to look forward to. So we have our hip hops event, which is going to be all beer, craft beer focus. And I'm trying to get some cool brewers to show up. And also a craft for the culture seminar, where we talk about the movement of craft beer and how it can be more inclusive as well. So I think that me, I'm trying to check all the boxes, making more friends than enemies, but hopefully, but the idea, like I mentioned earlier, is like, how do we imbibe in a way where everyone feels like there's a place for them at this festival? And I think that's what makes Charleston so uniquely different than other festivals. Beyond being a 501c3, it's the idea of also giving back to the community through our programming that we have, by allowing free events also to happen at the same time, so the larger community can come. We have tickets that started at like $45, and then there's ones that obviously may be way out of people's price points, right? So we did make sure that there was a nice selection so people can come enjoy the festival as well. So that was some of my direction when I thought about, how do I want people to enjoy? If you can't afford the masterclass for champagne, you should still have other moments where you can have bubbles, whether it's a brunch or the signature events. And so we have high-low moments where folks can enjoy and still be casual and be themselves and don't have to be so uptight and feel like they're not invited. I want the locals to feel that way. And Charleston has a special part of my own story, as that's where I took my certified sommelier exam years ago. So I actually flew down not knowing that the New York test sold out. And so I was like, last minute, where can I go? And then Charleston was the only one available because I was like, I was all geared up. Like, I just passed the first level and I'm like, okay, well, I'm ready. I got a shock by the iron's hot. And so I was like, let me. And then Charleston was the first place. So I have family in the area, visit in North Charleston. So before the festival, or me engaged with the festival in this way, I was living in Europe. So it goes back to the question you asked earlier. How do we reimagine what today's SOM or beverage professionals are doing? And so with me being a consultant in this way for how we experience the various non-alcoholic beverages to, you know, there's a lot of kombuchas in the world. You would have thought you were drinking Pet Nat. They're real good. So I'm excited to have all sections of beverage highlighted here. And so I don't know if that was a main focus of the festival before, but I can tell you in my heart is making sure that the tea drinkers have a moment, the, you know, the NA folks who are like, you know, dry January all year, you know, that they have something they can feel like they can be a part of, the same way they're already doing intentionally with food. So I hope that everyone loved the programming, and I'm excited to continue working with some of the cool brands that I've been working with individually and bringing them in to the festival and allow people to see what we see as talent for so long, but now we get to experience it with some awesome programming wrapped around it. So,
wow, that sounds really exciting. That sounds really cool what your plans are. I'm really looking forward to that. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today and to go over all of this. And we're looking forward to everything that you're getting up to in the months to come, and to Charleston Wine and Food Festival next year.
Thank you both for having me, and I can't wait to have you in Charleston.
Head online to find out more about Cha McCoy. You can find her at chamcoy.com. Just follow the link in this episode's notes to get you there. And be sure to check out the website for the Charleston Wine and Food Festival at charlestonwineandfood.com. And that's it for this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Radio Imbibe podcast to keep up with future episodes as we head deeper into the holiday season. Check us out online at imbibemagazine.com for articles and recipes that will help you get into the holiday mood, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and Facebook to keep up with us day to day. And if you're not already a subscriber to the print and or digital issues of Imbibe, then this is the perfect time to get on board. Just follow the link in this episode's notes and we'll help you out. I'm Paul Clark. This is Radio Imbibe. Catch you next time.